Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
This week is a first for the podcast. We're joined by two guests at the same time. It's madness. Daniel Bailey and Rupert Svensson-Cook are the founders of Veloce Esports and now Veloce Racing as they embark into the world of Extreme E. Their story in their words. Thank you so much to you guys who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger. Enjoy.
Welcome to the latest episode of our Gearing Up series, where we take a departure from the likes of Coulthard, Crofty and Connor Daly and shine a light on those who might be slightly more behind the scenes but making no less of an impact on the sport. However, before I introduce today's guests, yes, plural, I need to head to Essex, where the average house price in Brentwood is £513,000, according to Essex Live News. So my esteemed co-host clearly has wealthy neighbours who are all well above the national average. However, we're not here to talk about property boom Britain. We're here to bring in not one, but two special guests. But first, let's hear from my much taller and hairier host, Harry Benjamin. How are you?
Thank you very much. They're almost compliments, but yeah, they don't feel like it. I think I need to become better friends with my neighbours if they're that rich. I am very well, thank you. Timothy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Where are we?
In the shed.
Third podcast of the day.
Don't ruin the illusion.
The illusion was shattered on the second one when yeah, we said the same thing. But I'm good. I'm excited about this one because we're trying something new. So shall I dive straight in and introduce today's guests?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, ladies and gents, this is a first for us here at Motormouth. Historically, we've interviewed just one person at a time, but today we have two. Daniel Bailey and Rupert Svensson-Cook are co-founders of Veloce Esports, which has merged with Veloce Racing to encompass its diversification into real-world racing. Daniel is Chief Commercial Officer, Rupert Business Director, and they've been at the very centre of Veloce's rise in esports and electric vehicles. They work alongside the likes of Adrian Newey, OBE, and Jean-Eric Verne, who are among the impressive list of names involved in the business. Let's dive deep into Veloce. Daniel, Rupert, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for coming on. Question to both of you, first of all. Maybe Rupert, if you want to start with this one. Let's take it back to life before Veloce. What were you both doing before? A bit about your backgrounds first, before it all came about.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having us on. Actually, our roots are firmly in motorsport. I mean, Dan's family and his brother, Jack, who is one of the other co-founders, is also firmly rooted in motorsport. But yeah, I mean, my background used to be I was a racing driver. You know, I did the normal thing, you know, karting from the age of eight. Bankrupted my parents by the time I was 15. And then a miracle happened that my dad happened to sell a car. My dad worked in a local Jaguar dealership and he happened to sell a car to a gentleman who had an interest in the sport. I happened to know a very wealthy man who changed my life, to be honest, and plucked me out of sort of already I'd stopped karting and put me into Formula BMW and took me on a fantastic journey into motorsport. And came through the ranks, came as far as British Formula 3, built you know, a lot of relationships and great friendships there, as well as having a lot of success and winning races and the rest of it. But I stopped racing in 2012 when my backing stopped, and from there is when I sort of very quickly entered the world of the business of motorsport.
Yeah, it's a tough game to keep going after that Formula 3 level, isn't it? It suddenly becomes a hugely expensive sport. Daniel, what about you? What were you doing before Veloce?
I tried my hardest to get out of motorsport for about 5 minutes, but it didn't really last too long. My dad, Julian Bailey, was in Formula 1 briefly in 88 and 91, and sports cars. My mum's side of the family, was working in the PR sort of side, and Uncle Stephen T founded LAT, the photography business. And then Gilles de Ferran, who's my second cousin, is obviously a bit of an IndyCar legend.
Wow.
Racing, and I went to university and did Spanish and economics, and had every intention of going to work in the city. Worked for a VC firm as an analyst for about 5 weeks before I realised that, life's pretty boring when there's not paddocks to be in and races to be at. So went and cut my teeth at IMG, working on the commercial side of the motorsport division there. And had known Rupert from him working with my brother, Jack Clark, half brother. And then after that, got involved in the commercial side of the sport with MPA Commercial and sort of brokering deals in Formula One to Formula E to British Touring Cars. And then, as we'll go into, sort of Rupert, my Jacks, our sort of stars aligned, and Veloce sort of took off. Jack and Rupert were already working on Veloce from a driver management point of view, and then had already started the esports business. And then we combined on the Extreme E business and then merged it all to create the Veloce behemoth that we know today.
Yeah.
Was always going to end up back in this industry because it's an industry which I know and love. So
yeah, and it's hard to escape the world of motorsports, really, isn't it? And it's great that you both have such different backgrounds, but together that obviously has created quite a successful business along with your other founders. So let's talk a bit about what Veloce is and where the idea came from in the first place.
Sure. I mean, Jack, who's not here, really, sort of the three of us, and Jamie is one of the other founders, but we are... When I stopped racing and we went into driver management, I was sort of running around as a one-man band. I mean, I'd been in India as a test driver with MRF, this winter series MRF Challenge. And I was all this young Indian racing talent, super talented, well-funded, to be fair. And, at the time, recently just built into the Formula One circuit, appetite for Formula One. And I was like, I'm going to start a bit of an academy here and bring the talent across to Europe. And we know, you want to be a movie star, you go to Hollywood. If you want to be a racing driver, you come to the UK. And so I was bringing generally all of them were Indian racing drivers to the UK and not doing everything. It was a non-stop, from the schools to the contracts with the teams, to the accommodation, to literally and everything in between, basically, and driver coaching and the management, the sponsors and the insurance, everything. But it was great because I had an end-to-end education on the sport. But coming back from Spa one day, we've been doing something out there with one of our drivers, Jack, was on his way back from also doing something in Spa, and he was with his now wife at the time. Anyway, we by absolute coincidence pulled up together behind each other in the Eurotunnel coming back to the UK, and I was running around thinking, how can I scale this business? Brilliant, it's great cash today, but I need to scale, I need to grow more, and I need to work with people with more of the mindset like myself. And anyway, me and Jack got out of the car, had a chat in the Eurotunnel. By the time we came off, we were in business together. And it's sort of the business then rolled. We got to a stable of about 10 drivers. And then it was the same situation again. Every time we'd sign the 11th driver, we'd lose one off the bottom, really. We couldn't be in 10 different countries, 10 different racetracks every weekend. And really the drivers, whether it was the driver, the talent, the sponsor, their family, whoever, they're buying into us. And as much as we tried to get other people on board to sort of replicate what we did, again, couldn't scale. And the Friday night beers for me and Jack were, how do we scale this? We can't, it's sat in the pub, again, this is cash, but we've got to scale more. We want to make money when we sleep. So it was at the back end of 2017 when Formula One at the time were just dipping their toe in esports, and did sort of a one-off event in Abu Dhabi with all of the teams taking part. And we saw, it was at this point that Jamie came along, Jamie McLaurin, who's one of the other co-founders, who's next football agent, but avid gamer, came to me and Jack and said, you guys have, like, you're in a really good sweet spot here. Racing, as far as an esports proposition goes, like, hasn't really scratched the surface. Formula One are really late to the party. You guys have been sort of the infrastructure and everything we had here in London was sort of well placed to sort of, we had a simulator, we had bits and pieces, and we were well placed to sort of enter the market. You guys should give it a crack, and like, could we do it together? So it was at that point that he joined Veloce. We created Veloce Esports Limited, and watching and after seeing this one-off Formula One event in Abu Dhabi, where we noticed that on the Monday after the first F1 esports event, Formula One uploaded a highlights clip of the esports event on their YouTube channel, but also a highlights clip of the real Formula One race. And obviously Formula One have massively leveled up. I mean, this was under New Liberty ownership at the time, and you know, they were just getting going on things like YouTube. I mean, now they fly on such platforms. But we noticed that esports, the viewership on the esports race was more than the real race. And so we just, you know, with a really, really one-dimensional hat on at the time, because with the hat that we'd had in the real world, just went around signing all of these gamers who had taken part in this event, because nobody had them, nobody had the rights, no one was looking after the best interests of their careers, nobody was giving them guidance and support, and you know, the proper guidance. And we just basically took all the top talent. Then we went to Gran Turismo, to Project Cars, to Forza, to all the other titles and platforms, and we just kept doing the same thing. And then very quick, honestly, I think at the time we thought, great, we'll sign them all now. I don't know what we were thinking, because there was no business to it. You know, we were thinking next year Mercedes is going to enter F1 esports, Toto Wolff's going to give us a call and be like, we want your driver. But the phone didn't ring, to be honest. You know, we were, all the money that we weren't putting all the money that we didn't have from the real world business of Veloce Sports at the time, we were sticking into esports, and we hadn't worked out how we were going to make any money out of it.
Did you have the drivers? So you signed some drivers. Did you have any of them going like, okay, well, Rupert, you've signed this. Look, what now? Like, you know, you're representing us, but what's happening?
It was sort of,
they're still asking the same question.
Yeah, we were quite. It wasn't long before the penny dropped, to be honest. You know, like considering that, from where a lot of these gamers were coming from, we were already offering a really attractive proposition. We were giving them more structure to their careers, and they were coming here and using their simulator preparing, and they were already seeing benefits of being a part of Veloce. And we sort of had our own team, Veloce team, at that point.
Yeah.
And then we realized, I mean, people at the time, everyone talking esports, viewership, reach, engagement, there's so much viewership in esports, and you know. But honestly, like, we weren't seeing it. You know, the actual F1 esports events themselves, viewership wasn't actually groundbreaking in the world of esports. And all of the forts and all of the titles, it was great. But like, who really had the eyes and ears of the audience, and where was the real viewership? And the answer was in, I mean, call them YouTubers, broadcasters, content creators, call them what you like. But it was these Formula One specific, Forza specific, or you know, platform gaming or racing game specific YouTubers. And then we were like, okay, who's representing and looking after these guys? Because they have an audience of millions, and they're a really engaged community and fan base. So it was at that point that we then started signing these guys and bringing these guys alongside our talent. So, I mean, we had credibility of having the best gamers in the world. Now we had the visibility of having the biggest and the best YouTubers and content creators. And then you have a model. You know, that's a commercially viable product. We'll win the races, but we'll also get all the eyeballs. And then with eyeballs comes an audience of which you can monetize and commercialize, and that was how it all started rolling.
And I suppose for you, a real tipping point would come in the form of terrible to say it, but a global pandemic, everyone stuck in their homes, no real world racing. All of a sudden, the likes of Veloce are in a strong position, as sort of awful as that sounds, in the midst of a pandemic. But it must have done your business a world of good.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, we started Luxury Sports. We kicked it off about 3 years ago. And obviously we'd had good growth. We were already, you know, running and operating on about 40 to 50 million views a month on our network. We were running and operating teams for Fernando Alonso, Alfa Romeo and the rest of it. But when the pandemic hit, honestly, I mean, our viewership now is still at triple what it was pre-lockdown.
Yeah.
We secured new business with the Abu Dhabi government with an esports team proposition out there. We obviously signed McLaren. We have some really big names in Formula One that we're also building out with now. And it's sort of, the spotlight, I mean, the viewership on our network last month, I think, was at more than 120 million views. We're just, it's fast-tracked by years. Quite, to put a real yardstick on, it's difficult, but yeah, in a perverse way, it did us a massive favour.
Yeah, it really did.
And it kind of, it also brought attention from, you know, our investors, especially the businesses which we've gone into with, at this point, Veloce Racing and Veloce Esports were separate before the merger, but esports was, you know, seen, from what Rupert was saying there, one of the most important side of Veloce Esports is that it's almost like it's like a Sky, but for esports content. One of the digital broadcasters is Sky One, the other one is Sky Sports 2, whatever it is, you know, it's like that, to sort of bring it into sort of a TV model, which is not. And, you know, that way of consuming content became more prominent based on COVID. And also marketeers sort of started to take esports more seriously and understand that there's a huge audience there. And then with our kind of other operations in Extreme E, which is probably the only COVID-proof sport in the world because there's no live attendance.
Yeah.
And all the sort of, you know, which we can go into, all the sort of future messaging and everything around Extreme E, the investors were like, God, across this esports and Extreme E business, we've got, you know, the most disruptive and innovative sectors with, you know, we're a rights holder in one, we're a media business in the other. And I sort of think about it as like we've ended up being like a mini sort of innovative IMG where we've got rights in Extreme E and a franchise. We've got a media business which is pumping out to hundreds of millions of views a month. And, you know, we represent some really exciting athletes like Jamie Chadwick. You know, those sort of sectors to where the sort of Veloce business has grown. So definitely COVID brought that attention to sort of the people who backed us from the start. And sort of shed light on all those kind of synergies.
It's incredible the traction you've had, and you know the almost dominance in a way. It's quite, you know, it goes to show how hard you must have worked to make all of these different aspects work. And just to pick up what you said there, Rupert, about the merging, obviously we mentioned Extreme E and merging of sort of the esports world with the real racing world. When did the idea for that come about, and how easy was that to do?
It came in the middle of lockdown. I mean, we decided to enter Extreme E and to have a go at raising the cash and having a crack at securing a franchise again about 2 years ago in the paddock in Monza. It was me, Jack and Dan and Jean-Eric Verne sat around a table in McLaren Motorhome at the Italian Grand Prix, I remember. But we called it Veloce because we'll enter an Extreme E as Veloce, but really the key management shareholders were the same, but they remained separate entities. And as Extreme E was getting closer and closer to launch and kicking off next year, and as it sort of starts to get a bit more real for us beyond just a concept, and with these, you know, we were starting to get a little bit conflicted at times where, hang on, which business card am I handing over today? You know, the esports one, the virtual racing one. And in the middle of lockdown, we were in the middle of just before lockdown kicked off, from a Veloce Esports point of view, we were in the just commenced a big fundraise. And to be honest, like, you know, we're taking on already quite an ambitious, you know, sort of a growth strategy, if you want to call it that. And so we needed to raise cash, and we needed to, you know, to continue this rate of growth and the trajectory that we were on. And it just made so much sense in the middle of lockdown when we sort of sat there really sort of with having worked remotely for so, well, to be honest, I was in the office, but because I live nearby, but we were thinking, how do we've got to pull this together. We've got to harness it and leverage one off against the other. And in the middle of lockdown, it made a lot of sense, you know, and obviously as propositions, they, you know, one, we could, it's amazing to have an Extreme E team that ticks so many boxes for all the right reasons. and they have an audience of, you know, 17 to 24 year olds in the millions who will watch, consume the content.
It's an amazing series, or it's going to be an amazing series, Extreme E. And I read, I think it was in the FT when it was talking about your recent investment, which we'll come on to, but there was a quote that you called it, it's like Blue Planet crossed with the America's Cup, crossed with the Dakar Rally, which I think is a great description of it. But for those who are not familiar yet with Extreme E, can you guys just give us a brief synopsis of what it's all about?
Extreme electric SUVs, and I was on Radio 5 Live last week, and so the guy sort of said, that's not an SUV. I said, no, you're right. It's the Batmobile meets a monster truck. Electric, 550 horsepower SUVs, in inverted commas, racing in some of the world's most extreme locations. So the Amazon in the Arabian deserts, in Kangerlussuaq in Greenland, just in front of the Russell Glacier, and a few other locations, to bring, you know, for sort of some key reasons, which is one, it's about shedding light on environmental awareness, on sort of using Extreme E as a platform to drive awareness around these areas and how they're struggling with climate change. I mean, just saw yesterday another massive piece broke off the Arctic shelf in Greenland. Electrification, using these, you know, the 1,650 kg SUVs powered off batteries, racing at speeds of over 200 kph on 15K tracks. So they're like big rally cross tracks, but with no, you know, curbs or anything like that. It's going to be all virtual sort of cornering and everything. So there's a minimum impact on the environment. And those batteries which are powering that could be used to power a house for 16 days of normal household consumption. So the technology is incredible.
Wow, amazing.
And then also using it as a kind of conduit to shining light on the problems with equality in our sport and giving male and female drivers equal time in the car, having to compete together. You know, in a sort of a cheesy way, it can be broke down into those three E's of environmental, electrification and equality. And providing a media product which kind of transcends in dress, because I think you're going to have motorsport fans keen on this because it's, you know, big, mega looking cars racing head to head in epic locations. So you're going to get your racing fans, you kind of, and that will transcend, I think, your Formula One to your Formula E fan, because it's not, you know, it's motorsport as purist, because there's going to be no power saving. It's going to be bang, 20 minute races, full juice. But then you're going to have your environmental fans who are interested, you know, it's going around the world on a ship, the RMS St. Helena, which is being, you know, being made as as environmentally friendly as possible to, you know, so there's gonna be no air freight, you know, we're going to be, and the whole series will be carbon neutral from season one. To the point where it's actually carbon positive, or, you know, whatever the sort of positive version of carbon neutral is, because we're going to be planting trees in the Amazon after we race there, and we're going to be planting a million mangroves in the Dakar Senegalese beaches after we race there, and we're going to be working with local communities in Greenland to become more self-sufficient on hydroelectric power, so it can be completely, so the whole area can be completely renewable. So we leave legacy projects to make the environment better, which means you'll get your environmentalists, and there's going to be documentaries made by National Geographic. IMAX are making incredibly powerful educational films to go with it. It really transcends sort of a media model which has never been seen before in our sport. And for all those factors, we were just like, this, I mean, Alejandro has done it again, hasn't he? He's just spotted all the trends.
He's a clever sausage, that one.
It's
an incredible series. And of course, you'll be going up against some big names. So you've got a Mr. Hamilton to compete against there from a team boss perspective. Must be weird seeing yourself entering a team and going up against who is soon to be the greatest Formula One driver that has ever lived.
I mean, yeah, it's wicked. I was saying to Rupert and Jack, the sort of day after that was announced, so quite looking forward to the end of season awards, where it's like, yeah, cheers, good year, Lewis. But like, you know, it's going to be mega. I mean, what's really exciting about it is seasons one and two, there's some of it's quite unknown. You know, it's like Formula E, and like the race of development that you have in Formula One isn't going to be prevalent in Extreme E. It's more about cost control and the kind of messaging of the series. So everyone's got a fighting chance. So if we can do a job on X44 Racing in season one, it'll be all right, though.
Yeah, we're behind you. We've got you. I can see success in the tea leaves. Now, you've got some... We mentioned at the beginning of the show, you've got some other people involved in the business in the form of Jean-Eric Verne and of course, Adrian Newey. What's the relationship with them? How do they fit into the business?
Sure. I mean, Jeff... he's a long-time friend. Back to my racing days, actually, we were teammates in Formula 3, and so sort of a friendship that had grown out of being teammates. And we kept that friendship and always stayed in touch. And, you know, Jeb is involved in the esports business. You know, he's a bit of a maverick in that respect. You know, when we jumped into esports, he wanted to be involved in that with us. And it's been... He really loves to be at the forefront of something fresh. I mean, he's been in Formula E since the beginning, bar one race, I think. You know, he's never missed a race since. So, you know, he's obviously very close with Alejandro and the key guys from Stream E. And, you know, we're really ambitious to what we can achieve together. And Adrian Newey, that was a... honestly, it was a curveball we didn't really see coming. It was funny. I was out in India again... 2 years ago with Harrison Newey, his son.
Yep.
And we were just talking about renewable energy and sustainable motorsport and where we're going to go with it and what we're going to do. And we sort of sat on top of this sort of very rickety Marshall's post. And I said, oh, I tell you what, I really like look off this Extreme E. Like, we're having a go at raising the cash to secure a franchise in that. I think it'd be awesome. I said, that's the sort of thing you would love. He said, I'd love to get involved. Yeah, I'd love that. He said, my dad would love that as well. You know? And I was like, really? And I was like, you know what? I'll send you the stuff. And anyway, we started talking about it. And I've known Harry for years. We're really good friends. And yeah, just sort of one thing rolled to the next and sort of made the proposition to Adrian if he'd be prepared to come on board as sort of lead visionary for our project and guide us on what we're doing. Obviously, he has incredible experience. And amazingly, he's never worked with anything off-road, ever. You know, and his ambition and you know what he sees in the future is he really doesn't believe that batteries are the answer, to be honest. He believes that hydrogen is, and where with what Extreme E is doing, you know, with the remote hydrogen off-grid fuel cells to recharge the cars, and eventually, you know, to continue to research and get towards a, you know, cleaner and a better powertrain solution and power solution for the cars beyond batteries. You know, it was something you really want to get his teeth stuck into. And obviously Harry is a great friend and very switched on as well. You know, he's come on board with it. So yeah, that's how that all came together.
Now, as well as capturing probably the entire motorsport world and achieving all you've done so far, you've also just received, is there a £4 million injection of funds, investment? What, congratulations, first of all, and what is that going to do for you going forward?
We've got great funds for an end of season party, which is always
useful. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Presumably the invites are in the post.
Yeah. I'll give a little bit about sort of what with and so we could both speak on this topic because Rupert and I work together on the management of a group company, but sort of also have sort of swim lanes that we sort of individually work in. And I'm looking, you know, we had a meeting with our team manager yesterday for Veloce Racing on some of our costs for an Extreme E team. And, you know, we all know running motorsport teams isn't cheap. So there's element of the capital being in, which will be invested in our Extreme E franchise. And yeah. And then, and you know, hiring in the right places to sort of help us maximize growth and the story and everything we're doing. So, you know, from an extremely franchise front, it's just really focused on sort of resource. And then the esports side, which Rupert can dive into, is kind of get deployed in all sorts of ways of building the media network, etc.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, from an esports proposition, you know, so many of these, especially the US organizations, you know, they run around raising bonkers cash in my eyes off silly valuations. And I don't really think anyone has the model cracked. And, you know, we really do. We have we're already a revenue generating business, and, you know, it's and proper and serious revenue, you know, and it's pretty, we have a formula. You put X amount in and you grow by this much and you get this much out. And it's a pretty straightforward process. And, you know, of course, it's based upon ad revenue and on us leveling up and monetizing and commercializing the vast audience and engagement rate that we have. But Really, it's a case of scaling that now and really continuing to grow that. And, you know, we're in conversations with everyone from publishers to series to you know, mobile game studios. You know, we have this one thing that to this point, all we've been about is grow, get the reach, get engagement, get everything. And now we're closing that loop and starting to pull it together. We've been completely under-resourced. We're a team of pre-lockdown, we were a team of about 12 full-time employees. We are already post-lockdown at a team of around 20, and we will be 30 on the esports business full-time before Christmas. So we're moving to new premises, and yeah, it's really hard actually to you know, sort of take the leap of faith to continue such a rate of growth and hire new people and take new premises and continue with that sort of ambition. And when everything around you appears to be falling apart and people scaling down and people going in the opposite direction when they're going the other way, because we really do feel like we're swimming in the opposite direction to everyone else. We just have to stay focused on what we know is the opportunity and what we know we can achieve. So.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it sounds like the future is incredibly, incredibly bright for you guys. You both come from motorsport backgrounds, so also interested to get your views on a couple of things. For example, Formula One. Obviously, it's a slight departure from what you guys are doing because, you know, you've head more down the electric route. But what does the future look like in your eyes for Formula One? Is it going to become obsolete? We were chatting to one of our guests the other day who explained to us that Formula E essentially have the exclusive rights to single-seater electric racing for the next 25 years. So Formula One can't go down that road. So is the long-term future of F1 in jeopardy? What's your take on it? Let's hear from you, Rupert, first.
I think the prestige of Formula One is will never go. You know, I mean, Formula One is Formula One at the end of the day. And then as much as Formula E can be more relevant to today's automotive sector and you know, fit in whatever and be more relevant, it's Formula One is Formula One. It's a spectacle that I don't think, and the speed of it, the, everything else. And I think, I don't know, I used the analogy years ago and I still think it applies. You have horse racing. I'm like, I know it sounds ridiculous, but you've got horse racing. I mean, people used to go to work every day on a horse. It was used a horse for everything, from agriculture to transport for everything. Then sort of the horse wasn't needed in everyday life because of the combustion engine, but people still race horses. People, it's still an incredibly prestigious multi-billion-dollar sport around the world. I think, okay, it's a bit of an extreme in Formula One, but probably the combustion engine at some point will become obsolete. But, I mean, why can't Formula One just be Formula One and it just sound the best, look the best, be an incredible-sounding, looking thing, the best drivers in the world with the best teams, putting on the ultimate spectacle? I mean, I don't think it has to be, you know, it's so limited in terms of manufacturers involved at this point anyway. I don't think it, you know, the model has shifted from being, you know, win a race Sunday, sell a car Monday for these guys in Formula One. It's now it's about brands, partnerships, whatever that are involved. And I don't know, that's my take on it. But I mean, my heart loves Formula One, you know, and I don't think you can ever not, that's my day. It exists. It can't lose its spectacle.
Dan, what do you think?
I mean, I had quite an interesting conversation last year at the Austin Grand Prix at the Philip Morris party. I was a bit smug. With my agency, we'd done a deal for Sotheby's to be partner of Formula One. So I'd had a couple of conversations with Chase, sort of thing I was getting on the inside line there. And I was at the Philip Morris party, said to him, oh, you know, separate to the Sotheby's stuff, we just bought a franchise in Extreme E. And he was like, oh, is that Alejandro's new thing? And we were like, yes, it's Alejandro's new thing, which we hope will be quite a successful thing. But I said, you know, he said, the electrification side is great. And I sort of, and the reason I'm bringing this up, because I'm in line with sort of his thinking, which is electrification side is brilliant. There's a big market for it. It's great for manufacturers. And the environmental aspects of Extreme E from our side, you know, we feel very fond of it. From it makes your heart feel a bit warm. You're trying to do something good whilst also being a great business move, we feel. But Formula One's challenge is about creating technology which can move billions of people around the world, not just electric engines and not just on an electrification front. And I think combustion engines will evolve for hyper efficient fuel, you know, could be agricultural based fuel, whatever. And I think Formula One not being able to get kind of a license to race purely electric engines, I don't see it as being too harmful for it. I think more the carbon footprint it has in what it does around the world, if they can address that, will make it more viable. But as Rupert said, it's not, you know, it's a bit like boxing. People watch boxing, even if they know it might not be completely the right thing to do to watch someone get punched in the face. And even if you were to disagree with the carbon footprint of F1 or anything that's around it, it's still a very compelling watch because of the speeds and everything associated. And I think if it retains that identity, it will always exist. It's maybe less as a manufacturer's playground as it used to be, as Rupert kind of alluded to. So, but you know, I think the bigger thing, the bigger gap to fill was some of the other series, which were just constantly being launched around the world. And there was a new global touring car series, and then there was a new electric touring car series, and there's a new electric rallycross. I don't think there's enough demand for people to watch all those, and the market became quite saturated. And I think Formula One, Formula E, Extreme E can sort of coexist in a successful world, but they offer a different enough product for everyone to be happy.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the points I was going to come on to. You know, we're seeing the rise of esports, whether it's Extreme E, Formula E, it's Moto E, there's a electric rallying, as you say. There's a karting, which Rob Smedley is introducing, electric karting series for kids. There's even an e-scooter championship coming online soon. So is there space for more? And is there an opportunity here for Veloce, from a rights holder perspective, to pioneer a new form of racing that you can control?
I mean, if there's any investors out there who want to back us to build a whole new series, we're all ears. But I think we as a brand, you know, we don't just want to be seen as, you know, forever just as an esports business, as an extreme e business. You know, we'll go forward trying to innovate and disrupt the areas of the industry that we feel we can, and that's at the moment in electrification, in esports, and I would say equality as well, with the work specifically Rupert's doing with helping build Jamie Chadwick's career. And as that, and you know, helping kind of drive that side of the industry. And I think we'll see in the future trends going further. And you know, if our investors who we've currently got are in the future back us of what we're doing so far, and we sort of say, look, there's a new trend coming along and we think we can pioneer it. I think as and when we see that, we'll probably try and move into it. In the short term, just massively focused on trying to make sure we get our Extreme E entry right. Because if we took on another project right now, even if we did increase resources, I think we'd probably have a few too many things to juggle.
Yeah,
there's spinning plates and then there's that. But I mean, it's no mean feat what you'd be able to achieve at all. But have you ever fallen out? Have you ever had arguments? You know, starting a business from scratch is always difficult. Of course it is. But there must have been some tough times along the way. I want the juice. I'm digging for juicy gossip, basically.
I threw a glass of wine completely in a moment of excitement over Dan on Monday night, and I've never seen anger like it in his eyes. And he swears he wasn't angry. He's like, I wasn't, but he was. He definitely was.
Was it red wine or white wine?
Red.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I can understand the anger. I mean, he's wearing a very nicely tailored shirt. I'm not surprised he was hacked off.
I'm getting red wine all over this game, can
you? We've
fallen out. I mean, to be honest, Jack, me and Jack, I mean, I can't swear, but we had some big arguments, but nothing that we've ever can't get over, you know. It's all fair and love and war, you know. We end of the day, we want the best for the company, and we all share our ambitions. That, you know, we all share the ambition that Veloce wants to be in, and we, you know, the vision is shared between us all, and we're actually very complementary to each other. You know, Jack is genius, comes up the ideas and the vision for us. You know, Dan is the most, by far the most litigious of us all. You know, he keeps all of us on the straight and narrow. And you know, Jamie is really the esports knowledge and understanding. He's got a sixth sense of what works and what doesn't in the esports space. And I don't really know what my role is, but
is one of, if not the best deal makers you ever come along and meet. So he's our Bernie in that front. So
that's
he's right. We've got a nice management team which complement each other really well. But you know, we have discussions around big decisions we need to make, and at times we don't agree. But we've all known each other for long enough. I mean, the fact that one of the co-founders is my brother means that, in short, yes, I've had big arguments with him, but they rarely come across into this. But with Rupert, myself, Jamie, Jack, you know, if there's a big decision to be made, we'll talk it through. Some of us might voice our opinions, but never has there been a kind of like, right, it's done, we disagreed, we ended up agreeing, you know, let's go for a beer after, and then we're all back on track.
Now, there's three questions which we always ask our guests, and they come with a varying degree of answer. Some are very, very deep. Some are very quick and simple. So we'll fire three questions at you. I think we'll split it up because we've got two of you here. So I think we'll fire the first one at Rupert, and I'll kick off Harry, if that's all right. Rupert, what's got you excited at the moment?
Well, that's a tough one. What's got me excited at the moment? Quite excited, but I really am very excited and very interested in SpaceX. I mean, I know it sounds a bit cliche. Like, is that going to be a thing? Are we going to start to be able to go to space
And how can Veloce get a franchise in that?
That's a big investment.
That's it. I mean, that's what's got me excited, I'd say.
Yeah.
And one other thing, and I don't know, this really does think that I sound cliche and I'll preach to the choir, is quite excited to the next step for us. I really think it's got to be like some sort of advanced engineering, advanced technologies division or something like that, because we have such an eye on what's next and what's coming next. And if you look at motorsport the industry as a whole right now, where are the three opportunities? Women in the sport, Jenny Chadwick, she's the best in the world. Esports with the biggest and the most viewed esports viewership network in the world. And now electric motorsport. We missed the boat on Extreme on former E, but we've obviously got our hand in with Extreme E. And I think the next one, I think it's got to be, like we said, hydrogen technology. I mean, it has to be off-grid charging solutions in the long term. You know, you can't, the national grid would go, we know it would switch off tomorrow if everyone had an electric car. We just can't service it. So yeah. It needs to be some sort of off-grid solution to charge electric cars. What's that going to be? What's that technology going to look like?
That's exciting. Dan, question to you. Yeah. If not doing what you are currently doing now, was there another path? Would you have stayed in that office job in London?
No, I mean, it was actually the groundbreaking decision came when I was about 18. And my dad took me, I had a test at Palmer Sport, and there were my dad was teammates with Jonathan Palmer. So I had a specific day where I was set up in different cars. And I was quick. I was the fastest rookie ever in certain cars. And my brother was in Formula 2 at the time, and I was, you know, he set a couple of laps, and my data, and I'm not blowing smoke up my ass, my dad said it's the best first test he's ever seen. So I had this real, like, and it was like, look, if you want to race, we don't have much money, but I'll put you in touch with some people and we can give it a crack. And at that point, I'd already got into university, and my mum was like, one racing son, like, it comes down to you if you want to race or not. But there was a month or so where I was really on the fence, and it was keeping me up at night. So I reckon if my career having gone down a quite educational route, which then led me back into motorsport through business after I cut my teeth in other areas, that fundamental moment, if I'd made the other decision, I would have at least given being a racing driver a go, full on crack, and I would have seen how well it would have gone. But I probably, if I hadn't ended up succeeding as a racing driver, maybe gone down a similar route to how to where Rupert and Jack did, where I ended up, managing whatever it was. But that was the pivotal moment as to where I could have ended up being doing something else instead of sitting in meeting rooms. I could have been sitting in cockpits instead. But yeah. I'm pretty happy with how it did. And the plan is we make a lot of money with Veloce. We can sort of compete in a GT series on the side for a bit of fun. To race for fun
is
better to race for necessity.
Yeah. I think it worked out all right.
Hat tip to Palmer Sports as well there, because I count Palmer Sports, outside of having my three children and getting married, my day at Palmer Sports near Bedford was single-handedly the best day of my life. I've never done anything like that.
Jonathan Palmer an invoice, a bit of promotion, see how well that goes down.
Yes, please. Yeah. It's already on email, heading to his inbox as we speak. But no, it was so cool. I mean, we drove everything, and truly an unbelievable. As someone who doesn't get to drive fast cars very often, to experience the single seater and all the other cars they've got is amazing. But anyway, I digress.
It's run so well.
It's brilliant. And the coaches you get there are often, we had one guy who was going into the British touring cars the following year. You know, they're high class instructors. Okay, final question. We'll position this to both of you. We'll come to you first, Dan. What are you scared of?
Heights.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Solid.
Heights in a personal front, failure from a professional front.
So is that heights as in aeroplane heights or those sort of heights where you can see the ground and it's like I could jump off?
Heights where you're near the edge of something. I can't stand it. My brother's got young kids, and when we go to Mountain Uncles, they've got a balcony and so quite high up in London, he's holding them. I'm like, I'm inside the glass.
What are you doing?
Yeah, get away from there. It's obviously fun. But yeah, heights in a day-to-day thing are what really don't sit too well with me. But the planes are fine because I'm not looking down like that.
Yeah,
fair enough. Rupert, how about you?
Snakes. It's the way they move. They can't trust them.
Yeah, no,
can't trust.
You cannot trust a snake. You're right.
I'm not. You just never know out of nowhere.
I didn't tell you that. There you go.
Yeah, and then same as Dan, really, on the business side, like, you know, it's a fear of not executing on what we know is such an opportunity, I suppose. But I wake up in a cold sweat sometimes.
Yeah.
What if we don't do this? Like, we have to do this.
Yeah. Well, and there are pressures. You know, it's a successful company, but there are pressures that come with that. You know, you've got big time investors. You've got, you know, boards to keep happy and yourselves to drive on to success. And that fear, I suppose, will keep you going. Listen, we wish you both and the rest of your team huge success in the future. We look forward to seeing you in Extreme E for their first season. That should be loads of fun. And we must do more. So look, keep in touch. Rupert, Dan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and interact with others, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.